All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of React Roundup. I am TJ Van Toll, and I'm flying solo on the panel today, but that's all right, because we are joined by an awesome guest, Sean Wang, aka Swix. I think I got that right, is joining us today. So Sean, why don't you give us a little introduction to yourself, tell us why you're famous, all that good stuff.
Don't know about famous, but so hey everyone, I'm from Singapore and most recently live in New York City, working on essentially like web development, JavaScripty, Reacty stuff. Been doing this for a while. I was previously at Netlify and recently joined AWS this year. I also helped to moderate the r/react.js subreddit, where we're looking for more moderators. Like literally this morning, I just whipped up a new moderator application. So if you're interested in helping to run a community of over 200,000 React developers. Yep. And yeah, I do a bunch of speaking and writing about React. And I think, you know, most recently I did a What's New in React talk, which is always, you know, it's kind of like easy because, like, you know, you just like pull together a bunch of things, but then it's also hard because, like, what do you put in and how do you organize it? So I did this talk for IonicConf, and I think that's what we're going to talk about today.
Leveling up is important. I spend at least an hour every day learning ways I can improve my business or take a break and listen to a good book. If you're looking to level up, I recommend you start out with the 12-week year as a system to plan out where you want to end up and how to get the results you want. You can get it free by going to audibletrial.com/code. That's audibletrial.com/code.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me because in a sense, like React, and on one hand, like doesn't change much at all, right? Like you can have React code and your code is just going to continue to work. But on the other hand, the React world is so big and so crazy that things change all the time. So like, I guess to maybe kick us off here today, what would you say are like the biggest things, like what are some of the higher level things that are changing in React today?
Oof. Yeah. So, you know, I just kind of respond to the initial point that you made earlier, which is, you know, React 16, we just celebrated its third birthday last weekend.
That's right.
And so, you know, the major version hasn't changed. And to be honest, like the API hasn't changed since 15. And React 17 is also not going to be changing its API. So it's like React has basically reached the level of like where you know, one of the core features that it ships is API stability. Like nobody's looking for like the hot new thing so much as like, let's just make sure this scales, is production ready as fast as possible. And then let's build on top of it. So that's kind of what we're seeing right now. So the things that are changing, that said, you know, it is not sort of, you know, cold. The main thing that's changing, at least in core React, is concurrent mode, which has been telegraphed for over 2 years, is proving harder than expected. But, you know, it's promising to deliver a paradigm shift in how we write apps with very high perceived performance and just really good user experience all around, with the nice trade-off that it's also very easy to write it. So the developer experience is also nice to write. The difficulty is that it seems like React is no longer going to be a server client-side only technology if it's going to achieve that full vision. So what the React core team is working on right now is basically some integration of server side and client side. So the future very much looks more like Next.js than it does create React app. So I think people want to, you know, keep up to date on that, they should check out React Flight and React Blocks, which are kind of like the code names for these projects that are going on right now.
Cool. So maybe we could dive into these individually. So concurrent mode is something that, like you said, I feel like it's something that's been perpetually coming soon. So maybe you could tell people just for people that aren't familiar, maybe just give like a very short overview of what concurrent mode is. And I'd actually be curious what you think, like, why isn't it stable at this point, right? Like, because it has been a few years. It is something that I've seen sort of in experimental state. So like, is it bugs? Is it like difficulty of like edge cases? Are you aware?
So, you know, obviously the core team will be best positioned to do that. And all I can do is just stick very close to them just from my interactions with them. The way that I would phrase this, so what is it? It is kind of like, it's in the name, it's concurrent rendering. And this is actually something that was envisioned originally by Jordan Walk over 5 years ago. So it's something that's been like theoretical for a while, but it's this idea that you can concurrently render something in the background and kind of like set it up to be rendered, like do all the rendering work beforehand and then set it up to be rendered and then swap it out to, you know, when all the data is ready or when all the rendering is done. And that's a bit different from what we do today, where everything's kind of like synchronous, like you have to finish the entire rendering, the entire tree. And so you can cause jank, especially for much larger apps. And that's definitely what Facebook is seeing. And the definitive demo to for people to check this out is Dan Abramov's JSConf Iceland video, where he kind of showed off the two headline features of concurrent mode, which is React Suspense and time slicing. Time slicing you get for free once you opt into concurrent mode. Like the way that you opt into concurrent mode is essentially just swapping your root out. So you used to do React DOM.render, now you do React.createRoot. And once you do that, you know, especially when you opt into the unstable concurrent mode, then you opt into all of your, the entire tree of React elements being concurrent mode. That means that all of them are rendered using time slicing, which means that you don't no longer sort of block on sort of rendering expensive components, which is just like an automatic improvement in terms of your perceived performance. And that's great. The other part is suspense, which makes it much easier for you to coordinate the reveal of specific screens. And we can go further into that. But I do a lot more of this, you know, I sort of build a React from scratch and then show you how, you know, to implement something like a concurrent mode in one of my talks. So the title of that talk is Concurrent React from Scratch. Just Google it up, you'll see it. And then the final point I want to answer is regarding stability. It's experimental because they don't want to commit to a specific API. They're very, very careful about committing to external APIs because the moment they mark something as released, then they have to support it forever. And people will be very, very pissed if they release something and then go back on it. So that's the kind of care you have to take at the scale of React, where you have 3 to 5 million developers depending on you. But they don't take that level of caution with themselves. So in Facebook.com, the big FB5 rewrite that they just pushed, concurrent mode is in active production use. So it's pretty funny that Facebook gets it and the rest of us don't, simply because our demands are higher than Facebook's.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. And I grabbed the link to your talk too. So if you're listening to this, you can check the show notes to follow up if you want to watch that talk and go into a little more depth on concurrent mode. Yeah, because I see it too, because I work for the company at Progress. We make UI components, and UI components are like a prime example of where you might want this sort of rendering thing, right? Because especially if you're showing a more complex bit of UI, lots of times you can have lots of complex things going on. So we have lots of people asking us all the time when this is coming, and we got to give the same sort of answer of like, well, like it's complicated and Facebook's kind of using it. And so hopefully we'll reach the point here soon where it's actually the experimental flag is taken off and it's ready for everybody to use.
Yeah, you know, it'll come when it comes. You know, I don't think it's constructive to speculate. I see constantly Q&As at every single React conference that I do. When is it coming? Like, how do we get ready for it? Just write your apps. Like, it's fine. Like, there'll be a migration path. You don't have to be ahead on everything. You can if you want to. And I've done it. You know, it's just not super rewarding if you don't work at Facebook. So don't worry about it.
Well, so speaking of being like on top of new features and such, are there any other features that you think are worth highlighting in like the later releases of React 16 or even into React 17 is now a thing, right, that people are looking forward to? Like in those releases, are there things that we all should be aware of, be taking into account for our apps and things like that?
So obviously, let's talk about React 16 first. So part of the talk that I did was kind of rounding up the past year in React minor versions. So that's React 16.9 to 16.13. And these are all like anticlimactic versus compared to 16.8, which is the one with hooks. So hooks obviously changed the game. And now they're kind of boring because, you know, they haven't changed that much. And 16.9 to 16.13 was a lot about sort of incremental developer experience improvements from testing, like async act, and then they publish a testing recipes guide on the React docs. There's a new React profiler component with some interesting sort of profiling capabilities that you might want to call. There's new DX developer experience warnings. There's deprecations of stuff that you shouldn't be using anyway. And then there's a more formal sort of release channel organization. So very much like developer experience-y type things to help you develop React apps, but nothing sort of major as hooks. So very much the same thing for React 17, except that because you're bumping a major version, you're allowed to deprecate some things and change the behavior of some other things. So, you know, something that people are pretty excited about, which shows you how really minor this is that the JSX import's going away because Babel is now able to, you know, automatically import the new JSX runtime. In practice, that just means that you just remove one line of code from every React file that you have. Not a big deal, but under the hood, it may cause some speed improvements at very big scale, and it may cause some improvement in typings way down the line, which is to say that it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, I think people react to that so like viscerally because we've typed that
there's
line
nothing
of code so many times, right? Like I feel like in my sleep, right?
It's could suffer some.
Yeah, exactly. It's like muscle memory at this point.
I've been a React beginner and I have forgotten that line of code. And then I see that error and I'm like, what is this like undefined, React is undefined thing. So yeah, I get it. Like you want to make an improvement. It's great. It's just like, there's nothing else to talk about. That's why we're making a big deal out of it.
Yeah. And I don't think this is necessarily a bad thing either, right? I mean, it's really a testament to how stable React has become and how widespread it is and how they really, at this point, it's hard to change anything fundamental to React just because it's got such a widespread usage. You really just can't break existing apps.
Yeah, so which is kind of my thesis. So I wrote a blog post about this called The Age of React Distros. And that's a phrase that came from James Nelson, who's no longer active on Twitter, but he's someone I look up to on React stuff. I think he's been on this podcast actually. But anyway, so yeah, you know, the innovation has gone to building on top of React rather than inside of React itself.
Yeah, and I think some of it too, I'd actually be curious your thoughts on React and the stuff they did in React 17 related to like upgrade paths as well. And if I'm remembering correctly, it's basically React 17 did a lot of internal work to make sort of future-proofing React and also like the ability to run like, I believe, two versions of React on the same page sort of thing as well. Is that like a thing you see like developers realistically actually doing, or is that more of like a niche sort of thing?
Yeah. Super niche.
Okay.
Like you probably pretty much have to be like Airbnb or something scale to even care. Most of us should be able to just bump the version and carry on with our lives. And that's the way it should be. But yeah, I also just don't care about it because I'm not at that scale and I don't want to be. So I'm good.
Cool. Well, I know another part of your talk was getting into sort of the surrounding React ecosystem, right? Because not everything that changes in React is related to core itself. And I know one big thing of that is related to the router and React router and what's going on with there. So do you want to discuss a little bit about what's new with the router, where that space is going as well?
Yeah. So essentially, I mean, routing has never been very competitive. There are basically only two routers in the game. There's React Router and then there's Next.js Router. React Router had a schism the past 2 years. So it split into Reach Router and React Router v5. And then Michael and Ryan got back together again. And now they're working on React Router v6. Still not released. It is probably going to like, so there's some API changes, which people are very pissy about because it's very similar to, it's not as bad as React Router v4, but it is still some churn in API, which is kind of regrettable, but you know, it reflects their best opinions at this time. And partially, I think the main feature is that they're supporting nested routing much more, which, you know, React Router v4 and Reach Router were kind of more, you had to specify the entire path, whereas here you can actually move, you actually have route composition, which they love. And then the other thing is obviously because they're all in on hooks, they're able to drop support and the size decreased from 20 kilobytes to 8 kilobytes. So that's a lot. That's a pure win. The main realization about routing actually is that, you know, a lot of it has to do with like how it interacts with a cache, especially for statically generated sites. But then also, I think just like there's just a general realization that routers should come with some sort of cache. And that's what Michael and Ryan are building into Remix, which is the new sort of React meta framework that they have yet to release, but it will basically be released concurrently with React Router v6. And so like React Router v6 will be kind of just be like the client-side version, and then React and then Remix will be kind of that plus the server-side infrastructure that you need to achieve their sort of full stack vision. So that's interesting. And then obviously on Next.js side of things, not much changing over there. Just, you know, the hooks version is out. So that's what's going on there.
So a couple questions related to that. So React Router v6, so currently that's sort of like in a beta state, correct? Like that's not a live thing?
Yeah, it's been for a while. I'm not sure what the game plan is. I haven't stuck too close yet, but it's been like in beta for a while. Yeah, for the entire calendar year of 2020. So I suspect basically it will just release whenever Remix is released, and it will just be like the free client version, whereas the Remix will be paid and sort of full stacky version. And obviously they're being developed together because it's very tightly integrated with the full stack framework.
Yeah, when you say caching too, that's sort of intriguing. Is that like caching at the browser level, or is it some sort of like internal cache to the router that it's caching different, renderings of components and such, more or less?
Yeah. You'd have to basically replicate a bunch of things that the browser does for you by default, in the hopes of wins in terms of, you know, speed, in terms of user experience, in terms of like the ability to manipulate data programmatically through APIs that the browser just doesn't give you. And I think obviously this is a little bit contentious, especially among the no frameworks crowd, but you know, have faith. Like, these guys have been doing it for a while.
It's one of those things that, like, instantly in my head, I think of both the benefits and also the problems, right? It's like anything else. It's like, oh man, like your
trust
first reaction.
Trust them to know. Trust them. Like, yeah. They've been yelled at more than anyone. So trust them to know about this.
Well, caching is notoriously one of the three hardest problems in computer science. Mm-hmm. So
sure. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, like, there's this, and then there's like essentially all the other sort of caching, like React Suspense is essentially, you know, basically saying that all, you know, basically every solution or every app that uses React Suspense needs to have a cache, which is why you see libraries like React Query come out, where there's like an inbuilt caching system. And we all basically just have to get smarter about caching solutions. Next.js itself is also, you know, has opinionated caching layer, especially to do with data, with SWR, which is their stay while revalidate fetching library. And this will come to all parts of our stack. And I think we just got to deal with it, you know?
Yep, for sure. Yeah, because there's some real gains to be had in terms of performance. I mean, especially if your app is large and React is increasingly used in the biggest of the big apps out there, like any little edge you can gain in terms of rendering performance is oftentimes worth your engineering time and effort. So if frameworks there make it easier, then great.
Yep.
I am curious too, that this is probably a minor note, but you mentioned API changes with the router as well. And the thing that caught my eye, that's probably everybody else's, switch is becoming routes, which, like, is like the tiniest of changes, right? But like, it makes you wonder, like, why bother doing that? It's like, okay, like, I routes is arguably a better name, but it's like, switch is not a bad name.
switch has that sort of semantic meaning of like, we'll only pick one of these, whereas routes, like, you could pick multiple. So, you know, like, because of JavaScript switch, you literally only match one.
Yeah.
So I think that makes sense to me. But to be honest, like, I don't try to second guess their decision, just because I wasn't there. So I'll just report on what they decide ultimately, because I'm not the maintainer, right? So I'm just not, I don't have time to waste on like second-guessing decisions.
Is there a situation though where you'd want to pick more than one route? Like, I'm trying to think of like a use case where you'd want to match on multiple routes and that sort of...
It's more like a fallback situation if like something doesn't match. Like, Reach Router had this like kind of complicated, kind of magical, they're like, just trust us, we'll get it right situation with multiple matching. And I don't know, like it was a lot of faith to put in like this black box algorithm. So I think switch is just a little bit simpler. Like, we all get a switch, we've written switches, so having that for routing kind of makes sense.
And I think my last question about routing is, do you have any guidance on, because I've personally been, I use the React router and I've like sort of never had a need for anything else. So I've never even looked into the next router. Do you have like a short recommendation on like what the routers do different, or like what are some situations where you might want to look into the next router? Is it just provide a little bit more on top, or I'm genuinely curious what the differences even are.
As far as I know, it's more like a instruction to Next.js, like it has to degrade nicely for server side rendering is the main idea. Like, it has to fall nicely back to just Ahrefs, but then also if it's hydrated, then it has to switch to client side routing. That's why you have to use, you know, their link tags and their specific router. They probably also do some prefetching, which is very nice, kind of built in, which, you know, is every meta framework like Gatsby also tries to do that. Like, when you, so just for people who don't know, like, prefetching is kind of like when you hover over a link and you hover for like 200 milliseconds, you're probably going to click it. So they can just start loading that data right away before you click it, so that once you've actually, you know, moused up, the data is already there. You just have an instant navigation away. So very, very, you know, minor details that make the experience a lot faster.
Cool. Yeah, but it's on my list of, like, I think every developer has some sort of like list of things that they need to check out at some point. So it's been on my list. So I'll have to get around to it at some point. And so the next thing I want to get into, because this is another bit that fascinates me as well, is like dev tools and build tools changes with React, because that's a bit of React that's always been a little bit of a black box to me. Like I typically use Create React App and like magic happens and my app comes out and things are great. So I'm curious like what the state of that is today, what's been changing in that space and whatnot as well.
Yeah. So all the major build tools basically put out a new version this year. So there's Webpack V5, Rollup V2, Parcel V2. Parcel, I think, is not yet live, and Rollup is also not yet super live. But the main idea is that they're all sort of working on, you know, incremental new changes, like nothing huge. Although Parcel is like a very, very major expansion of their API, which is pretty interesting. Webpack, there's a small community of people that are extremely excited. Like this is the biggest freaking deal in the entire world, which is Module Federation, which helps you do micro front ends. And then obviously there's a bunch of very vocal people who could not care less about micro front ends. But you know, if you care about it, it's there. I think probably the more interesting thing is the overall shift from CommonJS to ES modules. Because once you shift towards ES modules, you leave behind a lot of prior assumptions. And that's where you get like the next generation of build tools, which I'm also pretty interested in. So the next generation tools are things like ES Build, SWC, Roam, Deno, Snowpack, Vite, Sandpack. So those are kind of like next generation in the sense that they're not as old as as the other three. And like, I mean, like even Parcel's not that old, right? It was released in 2018. So it's not that old. It's just like of a different generation. And so the experiments that people are trying out in these aspects, like ES Build is built in Go. SWC is built in Rust. Like if we had a different core systems language in the core of our build tools, people are seeing like 70 to 100 times faster builds, and that actually starts to add up, right? So the old argument was that all our tools have to be built in JavaScript so that JavaScript developers can contribute to them. Guess what? Like people don't actually contribute to the build tools that much. So like, you know, if we give up that core assumption of like everything has to be, you know, in JavaScript for JavaScript, and we build, you know, and we use specific languages that are for a hot pass, especially like where speed is actually important, how much faster can we build it? And you know, I think the next generation of tools are doing that, are exploring that. And then the other assumption that I alluded to earlier was ES modules. Like when we like edit a file, why do we have to recompile the entire app in order to reload? Why don't we just, you know, serve the new file to our dev, you know, environment? And that's what Snowpack and Vite are working on as well.
So I'd be curious. I think the one thing about this space that's like, I mean, we just mentioned like 12 tools, right? It's a very confusing space for developers. So I'd be curious, like if you had to provide like a simplified view for developers, like what is I'd be curious, if you're not using like Create React App and things aren't like totally automated for you, what's the most, would you say like common tool chain that people are using today? And then where do you see that, like with, like if you had to pick like some of these ES module tools, which do you see being like the most common, maybe, or the most like on the rise that people might be using a year or two from now?
Yeah, for sure. Like definitely don't feel like FOMO, you know, like something like 93% of React apps. I did a survey of the React subreddit. Something like 93% of React apps are powered by Webpack still today.
Okay.
So if you don't use Create React App, you probably use either Next.js or Gatsby, or you hand-rolled a Webpack. So I definitely say like if you don't use Create React App, you should probably be using Next.js. I think that's probably the gold standard right now. I think Parcel is very, very good for zero config support of React. Rollup can support React. It's just not first class, and you have to figure out some small config issues, which is probably more trouble than it's worth. And the other thing I'd also recommend people check out is Vite. Vite is kind of comparable to Parcel, but some kind of that newer generation. So, when we're talking about newer generation stuff, we're really talking about like 1-2% of apps, right? Like that's how fringe this is right now. Like maybe, you know, check back in 5 years, maybe these things will be more significant. But you have to have this frontier of innovation, right? So, and then, you know, I think the reason you go after the next generation apps, the next generation builders, is you want more speed, and you know the current generation of tools are just like too slow for you in terms of build speed and in terms of dev sort of hot reloading, hot refreshing time. And yeah, like it's very promising because like it these things seem to work. Like, I've played around with a bunch of these tools. ES Build in particular. So ES Build was like a side project of like the Cloudflare CTO. And it seems to be picking up in a bunch of different build, like as like an underlying tool in a bunch of different other ecosystem tooling. So like Vite uses ES Build under the hood. And ES Build, for those who don't know, is kind of like the Webpack, but built in Go. And it's 100 times faster by their own benchmarks. And so like, I think the future is kind of polyglot in terms of these like core underlying tools, because we've kind of reached the boundary of like how fast things built in JavaScript can be. And in order to break that boundary, we have to explore some other, you know, pretty radical approaches.
Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy experience for your customers? I mean, let's face it, the only way you're going to know that is by actually running it on production. So go figure it out, right? You run it on production, but you need something plugged in so that you can find out where those issues are, where it's slowing down, where it's having bugs. You need something like that there. And Raygun is awesome at this. They just added the performance monitoring, which is really slick, and it works like a breeze. I love it. I love it. It's like you get the ray gun and you zap the bugs. Anyway, definitely go check it out. It's going to save you a ton of time, a ton of money, a ton of sanity. I mean, let's face it. Grepping through logs is no fun. And having people not able to tell you that it's too slow because they got sidetracked into Twitter is also not fun. So go check out Raygun. They are definitely going to help you out. There are thousands of customer-centric, customer-focused software companies who use Raygun every day to deliver great experiences for their customers. And if you go to Raygun and you use our link, you can get a 14-day free trial. So you can go check that out at reactroundup.com/Raygun.
Yeah, first of all, note for anybody that also didn't know like me, Vite is VITE, and I tossed a link in the show notes as well, because that was a new term for me. And I did like the bit you said too about just not letting like FOMO take over here, because I think most React devs, like on a day-to-day basis, I'm certainly in that 93%, right? I have some automated Webpack that I didn't work on.
Yeah, you got other problems to solve, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, I feel like if you're the type of person that really needs to optimize your apps, this is probably the time to start playing around with these tools. Like you said, if this is an actual need for you, if you need, maybe you're working at a large organization and speeding up your build times and such actually can provide some big value to your org, then great, like start to dig into these. But I'd also say that if not, you probably can wait off a little bit, at least in my opinion, to just like see which of these sort of win out. Because there's probably going to be a little bit of consolidation in terms of which of these tools prove to be the most useful for more people. And then more tutorials and courses from people like you will come out to help people when it becomes more time to actually start to implement these in your more like rank and file React apps.
Well, so, you know, I definitely say this is the time to already start being aware of what these things promise, because sometimes you don't know what you want until you kind of see it and have take a look at it for yourself. And like I'll just ask you, like, how many times a day do you save files? Do you like, edit and save files? Like, let's say
quite a few,
you know, a few hundred times, right?
Yeah.
And each of the, like, let's say each of them, like, let's say you have like a slow sort of rebuild or hot refresh process, and that, you know, and that's like 2 seconds each that you could shave off by using a much faster tool. That's probably like 400 seconds a day, and then just multiply that by, you know, however long you're working on your app. Like that just kind of adds up just in terms of raw seconds, but then also your flow and your productivity. Like sometimes I'll just like kind of lose focus and lose attention if I'm just waiting too long for a rebuild. So like, it's kind of like every order of magnitude improvement in tools unlocks something else, something unexpected in terms of your productivity. So that's why people are so interested in this stuff.
Awesome. So I think next on our list of sort of newish React sort of pillars of things to talk about is a pretty small topic. So we got state management that's next on your list.
I should also give a shout out, you know, before we leave like the whole build tools thing altogether. MDX has basically won out in terms of documentation authoring in React. And then TypeScript has also won out. So, you know, I have this list of like how many projects have rewritten, not just like exported TypeScript types, but like rewritten their entire core code base in TypeScript. And so like TypeScript has definitely won, you know, in terms of React. And you know, I used to track the numbers, but like it's not even funny anymore. It's like something like 60 to 70% of the ecosystem. So you don't have to learn TypeScript to use React, but it would help you.
Yeah, I've actually switched to using TypeScript. I've been a TypeScript fan for quite a while, but for a while I held off on React just because it was a little tricky. Like I ran into some weird like odds and ends online, and I found more recently, I'd say within the last 6 months to a year, like if I run into a TypeScript problem and I Google it, I find the answer, right? It's become popular enough now that like, it's people like sort of assume that workflow is out there and accommodate for it. And you almost never run into a tool anymore that doesn't provide like a really good TypeScript experience. So
that's something I'm working a lot on. So, you know, I started the React to TypeScript cheat sheets 2 years ago, and I've been sort of curating all these answers and basically accumulating like the ultimate copy and paste repo for everyone. And so, yeah, it's still a work in progress, but like, yeah, I definitely agree with you. Like it's the hard work of a lot of people just kind of figuring this out.
Oh man, I didn't realize you were the person behind this. I've totally, when I spoke of like Google searches to find things, I've totally ended up here before.
Yeah. We've got pretty good SEO. Dude, like I teach 1,000 people a day React and TypeScript. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I'm sure you've solved more than one random compiler issue I've ran into at some point. So very much appreciated.
But yeah, you know, the work is definitely not done. Like I need more contributors and more people just opening issues. Like I'm sure it's not as good as it could be. You know?
Yep. And I put a
issues
link.
She's always welcome.
Yep. And I put a link to the cheat sheets in. So if you want to check those out or contribute or whatever, and you're listening to this, that's the place to check it out. All right. So I do want to get into state management as well. A nice, a nice light one, right? Not much complexity. going on here. So do you want to provide like an overview, kind of like we did with tools of like where state management is with React today and maybe where it's heading?
Yeah. So this one, the survey that I did also comes in super handy. And where people are at is that it's about a third between no state management library, so just pure React, like prop drilling in React context. And then a third is like Redux. So, you know, a lot of people using Redux is still going strong, and it's gotten easier with Redux Toolkit, which Mark Erickson has been working really hard on. And the last third, it's kind of like a mix of MobX, Apollo Link State, and then just like other miscellaneous state management libraries. So it's basically like evenly split. Like there's no winner. Everyone's just kind of like, you know, muddling through. Probably like the Redux ones are the best documented, but you know, we all have different, I don't think there should be a winner. I think that different sort of use cases, different scales warrant different solutions. So maybe this is the way this things should be, but that's where we're at. And I think state management is splitting out from data fetching. That's the other observation that I made. Like we used to co-locate state management with data fetching. That's what a lot of Redux sort of libraries were doing. But now we're splitting it out into standalone data fetching libraries. So that's where you see a lot more innovation with Redux, with SWR, with React Query, with Urkel, Apollo Clients, Relay, and Amplify Data Store. That's the one that I work on. And I think data fetching, you know, has a further subdivision between sort of protocol agnostic. So you just give me a promise and I'll resolve it. Or GraphQL focused. So like we'll actually understand your GraphQL schema and try to normalize and cache it based on your GraphQL schema. So that's obviously GraphQL, also from Facebook, very closely linked with React, but you don't have to use it. But I think tighter GraphQL integration is in the future of React, and probably Relay and Amplify are closest to that vision.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's, as we go through some of these topics, I think there's some trends in terms of, you see, like, I think as React is being used for like a broader breadth of things, like you said, it's sort of naturally dividing into more niche solutions. Because I mean, I think, at least speaking for myself, when you get started with React, you started off saying like, well, I just need some data, right? I'll just fetch or whatever the simple thing is. But then as you get into more complex situations, you need to get into some more advanced data fetching. What am I caching? Maybe how does this relate to my server? And it sort of leads to this sort of branching off of more and more niche solutions for people that need it. And I'm sort of with you, like there's some downsides in the sense of like, it's easy to get overwhelmed by this because you see a lot of these terms, a lot of these libraries that are out there. But at the same time, like it sort of naturally leads to more advanced solutions, and the things that are popular tend to win out and get more popular over time as well.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm curious too. So I at least sort of anecdotally, I've seen a lot more recoil stuff. It's certainly like the hip trendy sort of thing that's going around a little bit more lately. I'm curious your opinion on that and whether you see it taking off more in the React world, or is it just going to fall into like a list of these sort of data related libraries that are going to continue to have some usage, but not like totally take off.
Right. So the distinction that people should have is between sideways state updates and then top-down state updates. So Redux as well as React Context kind of do top-down state updates. You update a provider and then it trickles down. Whereas MobX and Recoil kind of do sideways. So like we'll have like some subscriber thing on you know sibling components and we'll just kind of notify them and they'll just independently update and the parents have no idea. And I think you know the authors of so Michel and whoever does Recoil, I forget his name now, actually did a comparison between MobX and Recoil. And so it's that situation of like, do you need sideways updates? You probably need it if you have large enough app that even updating context is too much of a performance hit. So you really need that sort of subscription basis atomic update to you know your state update. So I'd say this is one of those niche solutions. It gets a lot of exposure because it's from Facebook. So obviously it has that official endorsement. But yeah, you may not need it.
Yeah, Dave McCabe is the name. I was brain farting on that too, so I had to look it up. So. So I know we have a few other topics we want to get to. So maybe we could do a little bit of like a grab bag here at the end of some of the related things of what's new. And I know one thing that I'd be curious your opinion on is styling in the React world, just because a nice non-controversial one, right? So this is another one where obviously there's some options. I'm curious where you see like the trend lines going in terms of what's most common usage. Is it like just like sort of some regular CSS modules, CSS and JavaScript? Where do you see that world today?
Yeah. So I think that CSS and JS has had a very strong few years in React. I think people are waking up to the fact that the performance hit is, there is a performance hit because of the extra JS weight. And most of the time you're not using CSS and JS for anything more than just the developer experience of being able to write, you know, something that looks like real CSS instead of like some random state object, some random style object. So people are trying to explore other options. So, you know, CSS modules are still very popular. Just like import CSS is still very popular. There's all these sort of like, you know, there's a huge spectrum of approaches, but like some alternatives are emerging. So for example, like there's this idea of dynamic versus static CSS and JS. Like static CSS and JS basically means like you can write what looks like CSS and JS, but there's no JS at the end when you sort of compile it. Like it all compiles out to just regular CSS. And that's what Linaria and AstroTurf are doing. Whereas dynamic, you're literally injecting via JS, you know, with some overhead. And that's what style components and emotion are doing. And there's a lot of good tooling built on top of style emotion and style components and emotion. So, you know, probably one of the best regarded libraries like Chakra UI is built on top of emotion. And it's hard for those to go away. But I think as people are just kind of like more performance conscious and more, you know, and seek a better way, like, you know, in terms of like the whole, like use the right tool for the job. Like if you're not writing dynamic CSS, then maybe do something more static so that you're not running random JavaScript code that isn't actually getting executed all the time. This story is not as simple as I'm making it out to be because there is static extraction for style components and emotion. It's just not as good. Like it's not as good as something that's purpose-built for that. And then the other thing I'd highlight is that Facebook is working on releasing Style X, which was announced at the last React Conf. And the problem that this tackles is this idea that our CSS code scales in linear proportion with the size of our code base, which kind of means there's a lot of duplication of like, you know, font style bold, you know, like font size 16px, like all this stuff. Like you should only have one declaration of it and then just apply it, you know, uniformly. So if you go to Frank Yen's talk at ReactConf, he kind of goes into more detail on StyleX. It has not been released, but there is an open source clone of this idea that you should write the CSS that you want to write, but it compiles to this atomic utility CSS. And then ultimately, you know, the end conclusion of that is that you should just write utility CSS by yourself. And that's what Tailwind CSS is kind of preaching. And I'll disclose my biases that I think Tailwind is really, really good for anything static. And so I think the ultimate vision for me is something like a Tailwind or StyleX for static styles, and then something like a style components or emotion for dynamic styles, with the understanding that very, very few use cases actually warrant using dynamic CSS and JS, but it's there if you need it.
Yeah, this is sort of exciting to me because I remember when I first saw CSS in JavaScript, I thought the approach was kind of innovative and kind of interesting. But like as soon as I figured out that it was actually being sort of injected at runtime, that was like a showstopper for me. I instantly
said, it's like yeah, you're randomly adding like 50 kilobytes of JS for styles that are not that dynamic.
Well, right. And a little bit of runtime performance hit too, like beyond just the JavaScript code. And like, so it's interesting that people, because I like, it's sort of like you want the ability to have your cake and eat it too, right? You want the syntax that you like to use, but without the performance hit. So it's kind of cool. I had not heard of Linari and AstroTurf. So I'll have to sort of explore those. Because I had played, like you said, with the way of doing like making emotion and style components static. And I didn't, this has been a while, but I remember it being a little bit not good.
It's never been good. It's just it hasn't been a priority of their maintainers. It's fine. It's, you know, you should focus on being the best dynamic CSS and JS solution there can be. But I think that this is a failure of React in general. The fact that you have a front-end framework where there's no good solution, there's no sort of standard, well-accepted solution for styling. It's just a cluster F, you know, not to swear. But like in look at Vue and look at Svelte, it's just not a problem. Right? Like, so, it's just not.
I'm also going to toss Angular in that bucket as well, actually. Because
I don't know Angular, so...
I came from an Angular background, and when I came to React, it was like a breath of fresh air. But the one thing I missed from Angular is that it handled CSS. There was like one defined way of doing it. It worked really well. It was static. It did scoping for you automatically. And to like not have that in React, and like to tell new React people, like you're about to go on like a strange journey of all these options and nothing.
It's unacceptable for beginners, you know? I could waste some time and figure it out. But like, I spent years at this point, like, you know, exploring options, and it's just like a complete waste of human effort. So I think there's something that, like, you know, I've been exploring other frameworks. I've been sort of cheating on React. But like, once you realize that it doesn't have to be this way, then you start becoming a lot more demanding about like, hey, like this is not good enough. So something I've been working on as well is like this idea of like React single file component, where you can actually have some sort of standardized place to put your styles. And so if anyone's interested, check out my React Valley talk from this year.
Awesome. Well, we're coming up on our time. Is there anything else on this list that you think we should cover that's important that we haven't got to? Yeah. Any other, like, what's new? You want to provide like a real quick like roundup of remaining things?
Yeah. So it's this idea of meta frameworks. So this meta frameworks is like this, like, sort of, I don't know. It's simpler than it sounds. Basically, it's a framework built on top of a framework to solve more problems than the original core framework does. And because React has such a small API surface area by design, that means a lot of people are trying to build extra meta frameworks on top of it. So Create React App is a meta framework with React and as well as a build tool, right? Like Webpack, that handles Webpack for you. And then Next.js and Gatsby not only give you the build tool, but then they also give you routing, right? So those like meta frameworks on top of React. But I think something else that's kind of emerging is that people are interested in building bigger and bigger meta frameworks that do more and more things. So here, you know, in my model of the ecosystem of React, there's core React, there's routing, there's dev tools, there's state and data management, there's some pre-built components and hooks, and then there's styling. So each of these meta frameworks are just growing in terms of scope. So Blitz.js and Redwood.js are kind of like built on top of Next.js, or like kind of like supersets of those other meta frameworks, in the sense that they also handle state and data, and they also give you pre-built components and hooks. So ultimately, what we probably have is like the mega meta framework of that just like picks everything for you, and you just live in a happy React cocoon. But that doesn't yet exist. But I think people are very interested in building it, and that's something that's going on.
Awesome. Yeah, it's again, like, I think the theme of this is like what's new in React is really just some sort of explorations at different sort of frontiers of React. And some of these are like a little bit more defined than others. And some of them, like, the future is kind of clear. And some of them, we're just going to have to wait a few years to see like which of these approaches kind of quote unquote wins out and such.
But also get involved, you know, like the best way to predict the future is to create it. And I think there's a lot of people just passively waiting. And obviously things don't proceed if everyone does that. So get involved. Like, the people who are working on these definitely need your support, if not monetarily, just trying stuff out and giving feedback. That's how we shape this thing to be the best community that it could be. Otherwise, you know, it's everyone's just like waiting to see what everyone else does, and I don't know, that's not super inspiring to me.
I think that's a pretty good note to end on. If you want to be involved in the future React, if there's something on this list that you're passionate about, I mean, it doesn't even have to be, you don't have to be like the next person that contributes to the, you don't have to write the next build tool, right? Because some of that can be hard. It can be as simple as just writing a blog, like exploring something and writing a blog post to help others, or helping on the documentation of some of these tools that you find interesting. It's a great way to be, just sort of get involved in open source and just sort of be a part of the tools in the future that you want to see.
Yeah, I'd also say, so something I, you know, I worked on a like a career advice book this year, and something I'd also say is, it's easy to get lost in solutions. Like I'm sure you had fatigue from like listening to the over the 100 names that we mentioned this in this podcast, but this the problems. Focus on the problems over the solution, right? Like the problems will never go away. The solutions will come and go. Like the more you understand the problem, the more intimately you understand your requirements and like what matters to you, what doesn't, then you'll be better able to assess solutions as they come and go or build your own when the time comes. And so I definitely advise people to like, yeah, like these are all good names with like nice logos and good maintainers and communities. Ultimately, try to understand what the core problem is trying to solve is and see if you have it. If you don't, then maybe you don't care.
Hey, folks, this is Charles Maxwood, and I just launched my book, The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. It's up on Amazon. We self-published it. I would love your support. If you want to go check it out, you can find it there. The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. Have a good one. Max out.
Awesome. Well, why don't we move into our picks? I think that's a good point, or good point to wrap up on. So I've got two picks for us today, one that's tech related and one that is not. So the one that isn't tech related is the game Fall Guys, which I think I'm a little bit behind the times. Like I tend to get onto these trends a little bit late. But if you haven't heard of it before, it's an online multiplayer game. It's basically like a battle royale, but to like a mini game. So you play with like 60 other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot of fun to play like with friends, or I play with my kids and we're horrible at the game. We lose like pretty much every time, but it doesn't matter because it's still fun to play with. And they actually just pushed out an update the other day with a few more different games and such. So if you haven't checked it out yet, I think it's like PS4, I think Steam has it. So try that out. And my tech related pick is at Progress. We normally do an event in the fall called DevReach. It's an Eastern European event. And as you might imagine, it's not happening this year. So we wanted to be a little bit, I guess, different and not run the like standard online events that's everything the same. So instead, we're doing the whole thing on Twitch for free. So we're going to try to have a little bit of fun with it. Do something that isn't your typical online conference. Like we're doing an escape room together and we're doing some like AR, VR type stuff too. So if you're interested in that, I'll drop a link in the show notes so you can check that out. It's totally free. So you can sign up if you want to get reminders and such. But otherwise, you could just drop in on Twitch during the days and see if you see anything that interests you. So Sean, do you have any picks?
Oh, that's a hard act to follow, man. Okay, so I'll do like a serious pick and then I'll probably try to aim for more like a more fun thing. So I guess a serious pick would be transistor.fm. So I recently started a podcast together with a friend, Randall, kind of like as a continuation of our books that they're sort of like career chatty, you know, like I think like there's all these technical stuff that is interesting, but then ultimately the stuff that lasts the longest is the non-technical parts of, you know, technical careers. So we try to go into that. It's called Career Chats. That's the podcast that we work on, but transistor.fm has been pretty easy to use and pretty worth it. Like, you know, we have a site, we have a player that's embedded within Twitter. It just does all the things that we want out of a podcast host. And I think that's pretty cool. And then fun pick, I think Cobra Kai, I've been watching on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not. It's been on my list because I've heard good things.
Yeah, it lives up to the expectation. Like it's this continuation of like, there's Karate Kid 1, 2, 3, and then they went away for 30 years. And now there's like this sort of revival from like, they got the original actors. They got Ralph Macchio and the other guy, what's his, I forget his name.
Oh, yeah.
Billy Zabka. But like, they're like, what if the bad guys were the good guys now? So, so it's pretty interesting. It's like, I think there's this whole sort of revival in terms of like nostalgia in American culture, but like Karate Kid feels like it's earned it, especially because the original actors came back and they're like very, very passionate, very, very involved. They're not just kind of like phoning it in just for nostalgia value. They're actually the main characters. And it's just amazing to watch these people, you know, who like were doing this like 30 years ago, you know? And it's a good show with good fighting.
Awesome. Yeah, I've heard good things. I think you're going to push me over my edge of checking it out because I've been meaning to. Yeah. So very cool. But
also, like, you know, just be aware it's like it's a little bit like, I don't know if it's like targeted at teenagers or adults, because there's some adult references, but then like there's also like a teenage love triangle, high school-y type of thing in there. So I you know, there's a bit of both. But ultimately, like if you're invested in like this broader like Cobra Kai, Karate Kid cinematic universe,
yeah.
It's cool. Like there's plenty of flashbacks and it's a compelling story.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Sean, for joining us. I definitely learned some things about what's new in React and also some good Netflix references. So it was a good time.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.